Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today is a great day for me because I get to spend time with the disruptor for good. She is Gina Murphy Darling, and she really likes to stir things up and get people thinking and acting. Gina is a dreamer at heart, but she doesn't just dream, she makes things happen. She has spent most of her adult life working to improve the lives of at-risk children and families, and now our at-risk planet. She is madly and passionately in love with this great planet of ours and is tireless in her efforts to preserve it. Her big dream? Raise the consciousness of every human being on this planet about the reality of our climate and the health of our planet. Then educate, inspire, and engage them to be the change they wish to see in the world. And you've heard her for years now on our very own Speak Up Talk Radio Network, as well as weekly on my personal radio shows. And she is here today to talk about a timely and extremely important matter on so many levels, and that is voting. So let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Gina.
Pat, did I ever love that? I'm going to play it back when I'm doubting myself. That was wonderful. What a great introduction. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, thank you. It's always just such a pleasure to talk with you. You are so inspiring, and I miss our conversations. You're just so passionate about everything and anything that affects the health of our planet, from energy to fabric, food to climate, water and transportation. I mean, you just cover it all. Before we talk about voting today, why does all of this matter to you?
Because I really do believe that we are so at risk as a civilization. I think it's the biggest issue we have ever faced, which is climate change, global warming, whatever name you want to give it. We're on a really bad trajectory. And I think if enough people realize that, instead of being fearful, they can get engaged in the business of preservation of the planet instead of destruction of the planet. You know, so it's I think that all the science and the people that I hang around with quite a bit would say there's really bad things happening and we need to shift it. And I believe we can. So it motivates me every day. You're right. It's like, yeah, what can I do today to wake another person up or make one change or do something?
Absolutely. And that's what it takes. It takes just a little step at a time. Sometimes it seems like such a huge thing to tackle. And I love your disruptor for good. That's just awesome.
I do too. My mother used to call me a troublemaker. And I love that Kelly came up with that. It's like, yeah, I'm a disruptor for good now, Mom.
Mom would be proud.
She would be very proud.
Oh my gosh, she should be. Now, one way to affect the change with all that you are talking about and working so tirelessly on is voting. I mean, elections are right around the corner, so I want to focus our conversation today about that. You know, I heard something kind of funny, but maybe true, that the reason why a person should vote is so you can complain with integrity.
Let your voice be heard. If you don't like it, stop complaining. That's the way to change it. That is absolutely right.
Yep, absolutely. You know, so many people ask this question, does my vote really matter? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Oh my gosh, if you look at some elections, and I can bring it right home to Tucson, Arizona, where we had a very honorable man who took Gabby Gifford's place when she got shot, Ron Barber, run against, who's running now, Martha McSally, and he lost by 168 votes. Mm-hmm. So people think it's thousands and it's, you know, what can I do? But 168 people that might have voted for Ron that said, oh, you know, it's not going to matter. It could have changed not only what happens in Arizona, but in the country and some of the policies that have turned out. You know what I mean? So it's really sad. Your vote counts. It really matters. And in this election, perhaps more than ever.
And I've heard some people say this is kind of interesting thought process, is that The reason why I don't vote is because I really am not clear on the issues, and I don't want to feel like I'm personally responsible for voting for the, you know, in quotation, wrong person and helping to make the wrong situation.
Yes, they do say that, and you can hear me having the conniption fit over here. That is what people say. To me, having the right to vote is what makes America wonderful, and it makes us have a voice. And the democracy, it's the foundation of our country. And our forefathers knew that that was a good thing. So if you don't know what to vote on, what's the best thing to do? Educate yourself. You study for a driver's license. You look at 15 homes before you buy them. People look at what schools their kids should go to. Care enough about the future of our government and our, and in turn, our planet and the health of our country to educate yourself. And my number one recommendation is the League of Women Voters. They're a nonpartisan organization. They do trainings all over the country about issues and propositions, and every community has a League of Women Voters. You usually can go on their website where they have very, what I call in English, not in Politico, you know, not in politician speak, but in English. If you vote yes, it means this, and if you vote no, it means that. So there aren't, you know, obscure, hard to find, inconvenient ways. It's at the tip of your fingers, if you have a computer, to go to the League of Women Voters or go to, you know, the library hosts a lot of them. So you can educate yourself so easily.
And as you're saying that, I'm trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate because these are some of the things that I hear. It would be wonderful, and we probably wouldn't be in some of the precarious situations we are in the world today if everybody actually did care on a larger frame and a larger scale and globally. It's hard to get people who are working two jobs and have three kids and trying to pay a mortgage to say, oh, let me sit down and research this. Probably it doesn't hit many people until the issue would affect them personally. So how do you get past that?
I would recommend anyone who's listening who's saying, yep, Pat, that's me. That's me. I'm just so busy and blah, blah, blah. And what difference could it make? What matters to you? So let's just say good medical coverage matters to you. There's a lot at stake this election in the federal arena for who you send to Washington that will impact Medicare and probably Medicaid. And I would say probably every person in the world, in the United States, knows someone who's either on Medicare or going to be on Medicare or maybe gets Medicaid. People you love, maybe it's you that needs it. And there are big changes being proposed. You know, I don't really want to get political, but it's out there by some of the more conservative Republicans to make sweeping changes in Medicare. Well, that impacts me greatly. And people that only get like $1,000 a month for Medicare, they better know what's going to happen. And it's not like, it's not a conspiracy theory. These people are very saying we need to cut it. It's, you know, too much like socialized medicine. And with Medicaid, which is, of course, for more marginalized populations, at-risk populations, I always say we are only as healthy as the healthiest human being in our community. So I don't know if you've read recently about the outbreak of measles and people dying from measles. We need to take care of all of our citizens so that we can all be healthy. It can be selfish or selfless. But the way I look at it is, you know, I don't want polio to come back here. I don't want kids dying from measles. So in some cases, Medicaid is the only way that children have access to health care and immunizations and all of that. So it's an investment in your health. The next one I would go on is there are sweeping education changes being put on many propositions to a more privatized system. Well, if you believe in public education, free, you know, access to public education, make sure there's not something that's very, very brilliantly worded that if you vote for it might mean that charter schools and private schools and have much more of an advantage than our public schools. So there's a lot at stake this election.
Yes, there really is. And I think the two that you just highlighted, especially medical, that's obviously on everybody's radar, or it should be, because
everybody,
we're all going to be using the healthcare system at one point in our lives, whether it's for us or a loved one. And so you're going to be impacted. So whether you vote right or left, purple or pink, you do need to be aware of what's on the deck there so that you can make an intelligent decision. And yes, our education system. Do you want to talk more about that?
I think it's really critical that people understand what's at stake because, and again, the better educated our population is, this is the way I look at it, it's a very selfish way. The more educated everyone in my community is, the more taxpayers we're producing, the more productive citizens we're producing. In many cases, the fewer children people will have, which is good for the planet, because I try to weave it back to global warming and climate change. So everybody wins when we educate and start at very early ages. Everybody wins. I don't know who could deny that because the data would show projects like Head Start smashing successes. It's not a bias. It's count the numbers. Count the number of kids that finished high school and went on to college that had a good head start. So what's at stake is the very, our ability to compete in world markets. I care about that too. I want us to score top in the science world. I want us to win the spelling contest. I want America to shine. And the way that we have done that is by providing really good education that's free and accessible to everyone. And Pat, you hear story after story on things like, Oprah and 60 Minutes and 2020, where this, young person against all odds, their mother was a crack addict and their father was in jail, but they had a program that provided them good education and after school programs, and they're now, the lead scientist at NASA or something. The stories abound. So we all win when we give our kids access to a good education. It's a win-win-win. And I like the taxpayer part. Nothing can be better than keeping people off welfare for their sake and ours. You know what I mean? So it's like, how could you be against good education?
Hopefully, I don't think anybody is, because, as you say, that's our future. And everything starts with education. If you're not educated, none of these other things are going to, or topics or issues will ever fall in place. So, we need an educated population. And so hopefully everybody's on board with educating our youth and giving them the best advantage that they can. So,
well, the way our proposition here in Arizona is worded, it would make you think that all it's doing really is a voucher system, that you can then choose a charter school or a private school and get your daily allowance for making those choices. So that you might say, that's great. I should be able to choose whatever school I want. However, that really dilutes the funding that's available for education in the public system. So it really, in some cases, can cripple it if you're not really backing public education. Mm-hmm. So the money that's spent on the voucher to private schools, a lot of times it's for privilege, kids who already are going to get a great education regardless, and it eliminates kids that are marginalized or at risk, and we need to educate those kids too so that we're a healthy country.
Yep, got it. All right, medical and education. What about our criminal justice system?
Here's the thing again, and it's, to me, this is the nonpartisan or the bipartisan approach to this. Who is paying for criminal justice? Us. Mm-hmm. We are taxpayers. In the country, it's sweeping where private prison owners are making millions of dollars on it. And there is a quota for beds in the heads, literally, like hotels. You have to have this many prisoners or the private prisons get paid the daily allowance. Well, as a taxpayer, that really is not okay with me. I think we have people... And, you look at the different states. We have people rotting in prison that was, 18-year-old boy that did a marijuana sale, for example, and he's serving his 12th year. And who benefits for that? Mm-hmm. Not a hardcore criminal. I'm not saying it's okay, but let the punishment fit the crime. Mm-hmm. So these people are rotting in prisons. There's no sense of reform or rehabilitation or education in most cases. The private prisons don't have those requirements. I've gone to a couple of things lately. We had some town halls here in Arizona, which is all about criminal justice reform, and it was a totally bipartisan effort I mean, I saw Republican friends, I saw Democrat friends leading the charge, saying, when this happens, when we're filling our prisons with people that need mental health services or substance abuse treatment, we are not doing our citizenry, you know, a service, because that's what's the deal. There's so many of these people have the diagnosis, a significant percentage of mental health and substance abuse issues. And, you know, if you're in a certain class and, for example, you have a family member that has an addicted to opioids, in many cases, you have health care or you have the ability to send them to a treatment facility, and it helps everyone. They become productive citizens again. What comes from locking those same people up because they don't have the money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
And there's a lot of research. This is was my background. I used to work with at-risk children and families about something as simple as posting bond. You know what I mean? If they don't have the bond money, they can't get out. And it might be $100. So that person is going to jail, and the other person is getting out and having an attorney. So the system becomes, it becomes an even wider gap. And I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but I really say, who wins in that situation? It's a human being that could be productive, even doing a lot of the jobs that are hard to fill these days, minimum wage jobs, and nobody really wins except the private prisons and the politicians who made, to me, what I would call, you know, like a devil's agreement, let's get dramatic, right, to say, yeah, we want you to come in our state, and it'll, you know, it'll provide some jobs, and sure, we'll take your lobbying money, and that's who wins. I don't see who wins from our overcrowded, disproportionate to every developed country number of people in prisons. It's shocking to know how many more people we have incarcerated in the United States than in any country in Europe whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining that many people don't know this and or don't even think about it. You know, that doesn't affect
me.
I don't know anybody. So let's carry on.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
But you're paying for it. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely paying for it in your city, state, and federal prisons. It's paid for by tax money.
Right.
So that's another one that when it comes on your radar, you might start looking. It's so easy to go to, you know, Google now and see what percentage of your tax money is in the criminal justice arena, Department of Corrections or whatever it's called in your state, mm-hmm. versus, you know, prevention services for at-risk kids. It's ridiculous. It's been that way forever. But I think it's time to change it, and I think people are getting really fed up.
And I also think with the whole mental health aspect has been elevated, I think, to more on a conversation level, whereas before it used to be in the closet, nobody really talked
yes.
about it.
Yes.
So that's a good thing, I think, that
yes.
people are aware that if somebody has a mental health issue, it's really no different than if you had cancer and you wouldn't put a person with breast cancer in jail. They need help.
Perfect analogy. Mm-hmm. That is the analogy. We treat someone with substance abuse as though it's a moral lapse, not an addiction. And that's not okay.
Yeah.
So you're spot on.
Wow, just so much here. And I want to talk about something that is in your wheelhouse, and that is climate change. You say it's real and it's happening. So let's talk about some of the environmental issues that are at stake that people need to be aware of.
To me, there's the obvious, the worst wildfires in the history of our country. Please don't anyone try to tell me it's cyclical, or you would have to show me some scientific evidence that it's cyclical, because the severity, we never even had the term mega fires. We had fires, yes we did, and they destroyed thousands and thousands of acres. There is a natural cycle where nature corrects herself or itself. Truly, that does happen. Look at the hurricanes. Three hurricanes in Texas, you know what I mean? At Florida, the coastal areas are getting unbelievably just decimated, is the word I would say. They can't even recover, and another one comes and hits. And it's not just, if you notice, which this last one, and I forget the names all the time. It's like, what was the last one that did the most damage? But what you notice about that one is It was the highest winds of any hurricane ever.
Right.
You saw in Mexico Bay that they were 100 feet. You know, I looked at the footage, and it's like we've never seen the severity of it. So it can happen to you. The wildfires, now people are paying attention in California because it hit places like Santa Barbara, not a, you know, a very, very wealthy community, and there was nothing that could be done, nothing, because of the drought. So there's droughts. So many states in the United States are looking at climate adaptation policies. They're passing legislation like at our Board of Supervisors, and in some at the state level, and some at the city level. What are we going to do? Not about climate change. It's a shift in mindset where we now have to really look at climate adaptation. What are we going to do if our city is a food desert, which means every bit of our food is shipped in? And that food, when it hits and the drought's harder, that food will stay closer to their own communities. You know what I mean? It's happening in some places. And the flooding. It's scary flooding. So that's part of the not fear, but get engaged plea that I put out on my show all the time and in my writing. The other part is the more, to me, aggressive policies of this current administration, which we have to talk about. If you destroy a national park, it's destroyed. It's not like it's going to come back, you know, in 10 years. What difference does it make? So some of those things, so, for example, hunters and fishermen, there's the common ground where those people are very much getting on board, hunting associations and fishing associations. They don't want bears' ears to go away. They, for uranium, you know what I mean? They care. So, again, it's a bipartisan issue where no matter what your politics are, you care about our national monuments and our national parks, and the destruction of them is pretty awful. And then let's talk about the hot button for me, all of the diluting of the EPA requirements. And if you're me, you know that the EPA requirements for things like clean air and clean water are really weak compared to other countries. They're not like stringent, who can really live up to this? It's going to cost us so much money. They're not very tough regulations. And now they're being diluted even more. And do you want your rivers and streams polluted by big businesses upstream that can now just dump their waste? We had that already. When are we going to learn? We had that. Fish died. People got sick. Wildlife are impacted. So what I always say is the waters and the fish and the animals and the streams and the oceans, they don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Their bounty is for everyone, and their destruction impacts everyone. So think about that. It's not a conservative or a liberal or a Democrat or a red or a blue. It's America. It's our air we breathe. I don't want to breathe dirty air. You know, you and I have talked about this. The rates of asthma are alarming the way they're increasing. What do you think that's from? It's just, you know, they're diagnosing it better? I don't think so. Kids are getting sick. And so you see, you have the extreme of Flint, Michigan, which is, you know, one of our biggest national disgraces. But in our own communities, we have to be vigilant citizens of the planet for our health. Because if the planet's healthy, it'll help us be healthy. So to me, you can say that's selfish, but it's true.
Well, it is true. And I think, though, one of the great markers of that is the health of our wildlife and nature. And you see trees dying and bees disappearing and bats are gone. And you have to wonder where that's happening. You know, as you were speaking, I was also thinking one of my hot buttons are the cell phone towers and how, you know, how they've got those and hot spots all throughout the national parks. Well, I don't know that that's a political thing. I think that's probably a big business thing. It's like
that's profit.
Just, yep.
Either political or profit-based, and many times
yep.
both.
Yep, absolutely. I just wanted to pop that in because I think people need to be aware of that, that the constant use of technology that we are consuming, like we have to download every crazy thing at top speed, is not healthy for our planet either.
So true. It's so true. And I will tell you, I was just came back from a wonderful conference in San Rafael, California, where thousands of people gathered. Thought leaders, scientists from all over the world, youth leaders. Oh my gosh, it's so great to hear these powerful 17-year-olds make a speech that would wax poetic compared to mine. So great. And what our team said, two of my team came, Kelly and Meredith, and what we said is we loved being disconnected from our devices.
Yes.
It was felt like freedom.
Yep.
It's like, oh my gosh, this is how life can be, and reminding each other that It was such a blessing to be fully present and to be absorbing great, you know, information and to be with other people. It was so obvious, and not being involved in the it's like so the stations, all of the news stations, it's regurgitation 24/7. And I made a joke. I got everybody laughing. I said, you know what? I don't know what Stormy Daniels is up to today, and guess what? It's okay.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Exactly.
And it's not that I don't care about her, all human beings, but it's like it's just over and over and over, and they can put you into a trance by their repetitious coverage mm-hmm. of whatever axe they're grinding.
Yep.
I get so sick of it.
No, I hear you. I am totally unplugged. I don't use a cell phone except if in an emergency.
Oh my gosh,
I don't.
I'm so proud
yeah,
of you.
I do not use a cell phone.
I wish I could say that.
Don't
oh
text.
My gosh.
No, I'm all hardwired here. There's no frequencies. I've made it a point to be old timey, and it still works.
You're absolutely right. I mean, my husband would be standing right beside you. He doesn't have email. You know, when he works with me in the business, and I call him his secretary. So I do some of the appointments because it's on a calendar, a shared calendar and stuff. But you know what? He sleeps better at night.
Yep.
He's calmer. There's a quality of life if you're not caught up in all of that.
Absolutely. That's a conversation for another time, right?
It is.
All right. Well, we've talked about some of the things that really might impact a person's life and as to why they should become educated and get out there and have their voice heard. And you address many of these topics, not only on your website, but on your podcast, Mrs. Green's World. I want to just touch that lightly before we begin to wrap up.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. You know, one of the ones, if you really want to know about, especially if you have an interest in the medical one, I did this unbelievable podcast with a guy named Andy Slavitt, who helped to craft the Affordable Care Act. And he says it wasn't perfect. It was the biggest transformation we've ever tried to accomplish in my lifetime. So we knew things had to be fixed. There were glitches, let's face it, but it's a wonderful podcast about what's at stake. And we did it with Judy Rich, who's the CEO of a big community health care hospital here, Tucson Medical Center. And if you have an hour and you want to educate yourself, you don't have to go anywhere. You can just click on, you know, my website or iHeart or iTunes and find that. It's called Vote for the Health of It. And they have a national initiative going on trying to engage healthcare workers in voting. But I would like to think my podcasts are fun and informative and sometimes heavy duty. So thanks for that shout out, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. We listen to them all the time here, and we've been working together for a couple of good years now.
A long time.
Yeah.
I know. I need more Pat Rulos in my life.
Well, it's our pleasure and an honor, really, to share your work because we're all about that, you know, speaking up. And I always say you can't speak up unless you have to have the basis and the understanding and the education. So before you speak, you have to become educated. And I feel that you just do an extremely outstanding job of that. Your heart is obviously in it. It's just a beautiful thing. Well, we've talked about a few things, and I know that there's a lot more. Is there anything, though, that we miss that you think we need to talk about today? In regards to voting?
I think it is a conversation for another day, and we could do that, and I would love it. But when you look, especially if you shine the light on the criminal justice system, the disproportionate number of black and brown people has to be startling. And who wins in that scenario as well? They are usually marginalized either by economics or where they live. Your future is greatly determined by your zip code in this modern world. So looking at that and realizing, again, I think something at this conference we heard, like Latinos in particular, they will be 39% of the population soon, and in the not-so-distant future, they'll be on par with us, 50%. So don't we want to build a country together with people that are making up a majority or at least half the population? So I think looking at that and wondering what is wrong, why is that so skewed, there's a lot of conversation to be had around that, social justice.
That is such a big nut to crack that that could be several more conversations. All of these things are intertwined as well, which is a very interesting thing. You know, you can't just say, okay, let's just talk about education and think that you fix that and you fix everything else. You know what we didn't talk about, and let's just touch it lightly, is women and women's rights.
You pushed about every one of my hot buttons, so thanks for pushing that one. Women and children are the first hit and hardest hit by climate change. Because they are the ones usually preparing the food, they have the heavy lift. I mean, in this day and age, it's still, especially in other places around the world, but in the United States as well. So women, it is our time. And when I go to these national conferences and when I stay on some of my really healthy news feeds, women are finding their voices. And it's a much more collaborative voice. It's a much more let's work together voice. It's not acrimonious and as ego-driven. And that's just the natural order of things. And it's not that men are bad. It's that we have to realize that there's men and women. And to have more influence of women in policy making and in daycare and in all of those things, to have a more sustainable and socially just planet. And I love what you said. None of these issues are standalones. They're all integrated because we only have one planet. Yeah. And we only have one country. So everything that I talked about is in some way related to climate change or climate adaptation. And I can do that. People say, how do you make that related to climate change? And I say, let me tell you how I can do that. And it's, you know, hopefully based on science and things that I've learned in the past 10 years. So the issue of women and women's voices, once you find your voice, I don't believe you ever lose it. Mm-hmm. And so to see women, and especially young people in general, but young women getting on the podium and saying, we will not be silenced. We're here. Let's deal with this together. It's not a divisive thing. It's much more of a, you know, women have a different way. That's why there's, you know, men and women are parents. So I feel very positive about it. And I just, you know, I make jokes all the time. I hope I live to see the changes I want to see in the world because it's like, I'm not 40 anymore. So we need to hurry up with some of
it. I was just going to say, we're running out of time, Gina.
I know. That's how I feel some days. It's like when they say by the year 2050, there's one person that comes on my show and I say, can you just start saying 2040?
Yeah, please.
I'll only be 90 then instead of 100. Just say 2040, even if you don't mean it.
Gosh, you know what, though, whether you're here or you're not, the work you have done has obviously had a positive impact. So if you've caused one person to think differently, and I love what you say, one of your taglines is that we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And that's brilliant.
Really true. And it stays with us. Even with what we're going to be doing in the next 10 years, we're talking about our next 10-year plan. That's the premise. Mm-hmm. We just want people to think, because if you start thinking about things, you are more engaged, you want to have more of an impact, you realize what's fake news, you get off the regular news channels and you watch things like, you know, Truth and Power on Netflix or something. So it's a wonderful path, and don't be afraid of it.
Yes, we just want you to think.
Yes.
Oh, my friend, where can folks go now since we've just talked about so many heavy-duty things? I know there's more that they can learn from you. Where can folks go to learn more about you and Mrs. Green's World?
MrsGreensWorld.com. And of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, you name it. We're trying to be there so that we can touch many people's lives and get them engaged in the conversation of preservation of this great planet of ours. Isn't that what we all want?
Absolutely. Let's talk about your Patreon account, just in case people want to take a peek at that.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I'm calling it now Podcast of the Month Club. I make up names every month, but we have a subscription model, a membership model. For as little as $2 or $5 a month, you can support our work. And what you get for that literally are notifications about our podcast. We do special videos. So it's a way to support what I believe is a very, very important movement. And we're constantly trying to work it. But when you're preserving the planet, there's many, many different moving parts. But thank you for bringing that up. It's just a way that really helps us. You know, we got a new patron while we were at Bioneers, and we were doing the happy dance because it helps us to be free and independent. You know what I mean? In terms of our reporting and the guests that we interview, it's not tied to any, you know, corporate sponsorship dollars. So we'd love to have a platform that we know our voice is going to be preserved.
Excellent. And
love you for bringing that up. You can find a link on our website. It says, become a member. And you become a member of Mrs. Green's World. And we hope we provide added benefits that will help you grow and start thinking more.
Excellent. That's at MrsGreensWorld.com. Gina Murphy, darling, your mother always said you were a troublemaker, and here you are, a disruptor for good.
You are amazing. You make me so happy. You put a big smile on my face, and I love you and all the work you're doing, too. It was a very happy day for Mrs. Green's World when you found us. Know that I mean that.
I agree. You and I are kindred spirits. And so it's been such a pleasure to have you here today. We're going to do more. And thank you for all the tireless work that you do.
Thanks for having me so much.